Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here, and I know I'm standing between you and your dinner or your evening entertainment, so I hope I won't go over time in any shape or form. So this is a talk on what we've been doing on workforce planning, health workforce planning, and in particular developing frameworks which take us beyond the traditional models that have been used for so many years in most jurisdictions. But it's also got some particular relevance following the, I think it was 2009 H1N1 outbreak in Canada. And although we're just finalising this work now, of course, with the Ebola starting, it suddenly gets another boost in interest at the moment. So hopefully it'll be of interest to you and across different jurisdictions. So I've got no relationships to disclose. So traditional approaches to workforce planning, I actually subtitle this Demography Gone Wild. Because what it tends to focus on, or limited to, is the ageing population as an impact on healthcare provider requirements, and the ageing workforce as an impact on the capacity to meet those requirements. So we're looking at nurses in the last 10 years of working life reducing their sort of activity rates and productivity, and we're looking at the ageing of the population. And the methods that are used are essentially we get a provider population ratio, and then we apply that to future population projections, then we'll estimate the shortfall or surplus in the number of providers, and then we'll calculate changes in training programs required to eliminate these imbalances. And this is a model that's been followed for many years across jurisdictions around the world. And the question that is implicitly trying to answer is how many more physicians, in this case, it doesn't have to be physicians, do we need to train? Some of the features of that's what I think is a very dated model, is that it's performed in isolation of healthcare policy and population health. And what the actual question is, if we really unpeel it, is that it's saying how many healthcare providers are required to serve future populations in the same way as the current population is served. So it's assuming that everything's hunky-dory at the moment, and it's assuming that the way things are done are going to continue to be the way things are done in the future. And that seems to me to be a rather sort of sloppy way of doing things. What that leads us to is that the requirements for workforce are being determined by factors beyond the control of policy, as it's seen by these models, with the underlying assumptions that the population age structure determines service requirements. And so what I think of that is that epidemiology is assumed to be constant over time. So the actual level and distribution of needs are seen to be the same in the future as they are now. And similarly, provider age structure determines the quantity of care that will be provided from a stock of providers. So that's assuming that the production methods remain constant over time. So it's ignoring health technology, ignoring the idea of moving towards healthcare teams. It's just saying we'll carry on as we have been, or we'll plan for the number of providers as if we're going to carry on as we have been. So I don't want people to be too afraid of any algebra, for those who are not keen on algebra. This traditional approach is health-free planning. Current provider population ratio is given by N over P. That's assumed to be constant. And so the number of providers we need in T plus 1, the future, is given by the current provider population ratio times by the size of the population in the future. Okay, or in some areas we focus on services. So the current level of services per unit population, Q over P, is seen as constant. Going to remain the same in the future. So all we're doing here is saying, well, the future number of doctors, say N, is given by this N over Q, which is the inverse of productivity, it's providers per 100 services, for example, times by Q over P, which is the services per population, times by the future population. So we've got two constants in there, productivity being constant, and we've got the services per population being constant in the future. You'll notice there's no H in there at all. We leave H out of this model altogether, which seems quite crazy. So N over Q, productivity, are assumed constants. So what we've got is a very simple equation at the bottom. The future number of doctors is equal to two constants times by the future population. Okay? A very simple model which has been used for many years in most countries. So what we've done is we've tried to develop what we call an enhanced framework, and we actually introduced health into this, which is quite interesting after all these years that we're putting health into the model. And if we call H the average level of needs in the group, or health deficits, then all we've done is we've blown up this N over P constant, and we've blown it up into three variables. We've got the N over Q, which is the inverse of productivity, the number of doctors per 100 services. We've got the Q over H, which is the services what you're planning to provide for each level of health status. Okay, so we're actually saying it'll depend on H, how many services you want to provide. And then H over P is actually your epidemiology. What's going to happen to health in the future? We can't just assume it will stay the same. And we've got lots of evidence to show that that hasn't happened over time. Indeed, epidemiology has changed. So now we've got four variables here, four variables, not constants, that are in our model: demography, epidemiology, the level of services to be planned per unit need, and the productivity of providers. So this is a sort of a schema of the model we're using. So we start off on the one side, we've got requirements. On the other side, we've got supply. The supply side is a very traditional model. We're looking at the stock of providers, people who are potentially available to provide care. So this is people with licenses, when you've got a system of licensure. Then we've got the usual variables we'll put in there. How many people are actually involved in the provision of care, participation rates? How much time are they spending on providing care, activity rates? And then we introduce this notion of competencies to allow us to look at different teams for delivering services. It's particularly important in times of what we might call surges in requirements, such as an epidemic or a pandemic, because we want to look at maximising the use of a provider's scope of practice. Given the different levels of supply, it may be one way of dealing with this surge in demand. Then we have to look at the productivity of the different types of providers who have the competencies. So it may be that for a particular competency, a physician might be more productive than a nurse practitioner, for example. And that will generate what services we can expect to be supplied from the available workforce. On this side, we've got the model I've just introduced of demography, epidemiology, level of service. The productivity is on the other side, because we're moving this through services, not through providers. And that will give us our service gap, which then, going back through productivity, will give us our workforce gap. So this is a needs-based approach, because we've actually got needs in there for the first time. And it's also integrated, because we're looking at different types of providers being in the same framework. We're no longer looking at planning healthcare providers in a very silo-based model, which is what we've been doing for many, many years now. So, as the example, we're looking at an influenza pandemic. Briefly take you through these steps. We identify the estimates of morbidity and severity levels by population group. In the second step, we describe the service types, which we're going to base on clinical guidelines or practice standards, by the severity level of each person in the population. And then step three, we're going to locate the competency requirements by service type, using information from regulatory bodies, so which types of providers are allowed to do this particular activity, deliver this type of service, or contribute to the delivery of that service. And then four, we identify the competency capacities by provider type. So we're counting up, if you want, we're quantifying the amount of competency we've got to meet those requirements. This is quite interesting, because what we did was we took this through a whole series of different conditions to see what the different competencies required were for each of these. And as you see, we've just got all the dots in there. You know, we've done a complete Connect 4 board. We've put all the dots in. Because all of these things tend to be needed no matter what condition you've got. Okay, so it's giving you an idea of the range of competencies required to actually deliver a system of services. Then here what we've done is we've looked at, it's just an excerpt from the whole what we call competency map. And down the side, just some examples of things that will be required. Along the top are the different types of providers. Most of the acronyms will be straightforward, I think, for most of you.
There might be some that you're not familiar with. I could probably remember them if there's any people who are particularly interested in. But this is like the doctor, the nurse practitioner, the registered nurse, the paramedic, the licensed practical nurse, the pharmacist, respiratory therapist, physiotherapist, all along the top line. And what we've got here is we're putting in the box, what's their level of competency here? So one says it's a core competency of that provider group. So everybody in that group will have this competency. If it's two, it's a skill set in addition to the essential competencies, such as an additional certification. Three means you've got advanced training is required in order to have this competency. And four is an advanced level of education or speciality, if you want, such as an infectious disease physician, as an example. So we've put those competencies in that table. The dashes are that they don't have that, and the zero, the empty box here was, at the time we were doing this, we were just changing regulations for the pharmacy. So at that stage, it was neither here nor there. We didn't know, you know, it was between a one and a two at that stage. So that's why that's an empty box there at that stage. Because it's not, a CCA is a critical care assistant or something, is it? It's a lower skilled assistant, and so they're not able to do any of those. Okay? So this is if we're looking at a provincial level or a system level, an entire healthcare system level, and this is the estimated pandemic health human resource gap by profession using one particular team mix. And this was a relatively high-skilled team mix. So it wasn't substituting for in a great deal for physicians and nurse practitioners. And what we've got here is we've got a big problem in terms of, because this is shortages. And this will be at the height of the epidemic. Okay, at the height of the epidemic, we'd have shortages on everything apart from registered nurses. We'd have more than enough registered nurses to cope with what we were using registered nurses for in that model of care. But everything else we'd face shortages of. So we have a real problem during our pandemic. This is estimated pandemic response. Team mix one by profession. Oh, this is at the organisational level, okay? So a district health authority, so a smaller level than a provincial or system level. And what this is showing, which is not surprising, is why we face bigger problems if we look at it at a DHA level. If we're leaving the responsibility to individual healthcare organisations or authorities, we're going to have a much bigger problem because they haven't got the ability to be flexible and move people around like a province has, at least in theory. So you've got a bigger problem if you're doing this at the lower level, if you want. This is team mix two, and as you can see, going back to the provincial level, as you can see, because we're using a lower skilled mix on average to deliver the care, then we've actually now got more RNs than we'd need, but we've got far fewer LPNs, because we've suddenly bringing in LPNs to do a lot of the tasks which RNs were doing previously, but we wouldn't have enough to do that, so that'd be our constraint under that model of care. This is on the team mix two at the DHA level, and again, same sort of thing. We're going to see a very different picture because we're using different types of teams to actually respond to the pandemic. Okay, I think I moved on then, did I? Estimated pandemic. Now, this is what we call our all hands on deck model. Okay, so if you have the capacity to say, right, we're drawing everybody in to be dealing with these patients and nothing else, then what sort of challenges would we face? Well, we'd be short of RNs and LPNs and CCAs and just about everything else we'd be able to cover here. And what this does is to say, well, let's have a look at the peak of the pandemic. And for each element of service delivery, what would be the number of patients we are estimating would require that? What would be the number of full-time equivalent providers who would have the competency to provide that? And then given that, just a simple division, what would be the average required productivity of that service per full-time equivalent provider per month? To give us an idea of just how much are we, sort of overstretching ourselves here? And as you can see, for the first one, I mean, if everybody who was capable of doing this, competent for doing this, was doing it, they'd only have to do 59 a month in order to cope with. context in the pandemic. And you can go down and see how that sort of changes with the different types of activities, because different activities will have different numbers of patients requiring that activity depending on their severity level, but also different numbers of providers who are competent to provide that. So you're just using this to, you just get an estimate of the relative sort of likelihood that you're going to face problems there. And again, this is doing this by at the DHA level, the lower level of organisation. I just want to draw your attention to interpret the results of history, physical exam, chest x-ray and lab tests leading to a diagnosis. You see, this health authority had only 9 full-time equivalent people competent to do this. They're doing 5,100 per month if they were left to their own devices. So they'd have a real problem if it were going to be left to the DHA level to do this. Similar sorts of things with physicians for the DHA level, because the way we organise care in most of the provinces in Canada, most of the physicians are actually not employees of a district health authority. So the district health authority only has a very few physicians who are actually in its employ. And they'd have to be drawing on the self-employed physicians, if you want, the private physicians outside of their employ in order to cope with this if we left it to a DHA level. And one of the things we're trying to do with this is to sort of educate the different ministries of health and different public agencies to say, if you're going to leave it to you know, these existing organisations, you're going to have big problems. You've really got to start to think about, you know, the higher up you go. And one of the areas, of course, which I think is you'll be very familiar with in the US, one of the areas you can draw on very effectively at times like this is the military, because we've got a considerable number of healthcare providers in the military who, during most, you know, peacetime times, aren't fully employed in delivering care. That's not saying not fully employed, but they're not fully employed in delivering care. So that'd be one of the areas we could look at. So just to summarise, the existing approaches for workforce planning are not suited for system shocks, such as rapidly changing needs, rapidly changing new technologies. Linking needs to services and services to competencies enhances our flexibility to respond, particularly to surges in requirements. And our capacity to cope will depend upon the level of planning and management we're looking at, using providers to the full scope of practice, and maximising productivity through teamwork. And so I think that's the last slide I've got. I've just got the acknowledgements there. Okay, thank you very much. Well, that is within the capacity of this framework. We're just using it at the moment for the human resources, for the workforce. But because, as you remember, when we had that diagram up, we were going through services. So that services would include bed days. So that's all part of the model. So what I would expect would be we'd see some shortage there. We haven't actually done that yet because they were more interested at this stage in the workforce. But this, 30 years.
30 years?
Yeah. Sorry, what would be, what do you mean? You mean the actual population size?
Yeah.
I don't have the figure with me, but I mean, these are official government projections of the government actuaries.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what we're using. We're using the Health Canada figures.